my most reverential pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. This morning, we have commencing with the session 3, titled Dharma and the Rule of Law. The keynote speaker this morning is our own beloved Mr. Justice E.P. Mishra, former judge of the Supreme Court of India and currently serving as a member of the Central Trust, Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. Justice Mishra enrolled as an advocate in the Allahabad High Court in October 1960. He was appointed as a permanent judge of the Allahabad High Court in May of 1984 and later as the Chief Justice of the Delhi High Court in June of 1997. He was appointed as a judge of the Supreme Court in December 1997. Upon his retirement, he was appointed as the chairman of the UP Human Rights Commission in October 2002, and later he was appointed as the chairman of arbitrators by the ICC Court in Paris in 2003 to decide dispute between two international companies. On 7th May 2003, he was appointed as the chairman of the Legal Education Committee of the Bar Council of India under the Advocates Act and is continuing till date. Under his chairmanship, revolutionary changes were brought into legal education in India. New rules were framed and applied in 2008 after thorough scrutiny of legal education in all important countries of the world. He has been delivering lectures all over India and abroad in the universities, colleges and institutions. He has also participated in various national level seminars. With his spiritual background, his central theme has been morality and ethics, with foundation of value-based education from primary schools. He is also the chairman of the Preparatory Committee and chairman of the Reception Committee of the World Justices, Chief Justices Conference. He was also co-opted as a member of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning Education Trust and currently serves as a member of Sri Satya Sai Central Trust Prashanthi Nilayam. It's my great honor to now request Sri A.P. Mishra ji to deliver his keynote address. Brothers and sisters, put your hands together.
Sai Ram, my humble and loving pranam to omnipresent and omniscient Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Today, last 2 days is a memorable day as the judicial fraternity of the country has assembled at the altar of Prashanthi Nilayam, a place which is showering continuously a shower of divinity and love. It is a contribution I must congratulate Nimesh Pandey and his team and working everything, Mr. Seema also. You have been witnessing various speakers speaking about it. But the most important aspect is this is the person coming in Prashanthi Nilayam is this place, this whole environment is sanctified with sacredness. This is the most sacred place in the earth today. You will find this is a place where millions come without any distinction between caste, creed, religion or nationality. This is a place where people come, have their mental relief, physical relief, and were brought on righteous path, the great transformation taking place. This is a place world receives Swami word of wisdom, the priceless word through which it is energizing the inner core of every individual who come close to Swami itself. We are all fortunate to be here. Do we not feel Swami present today? Is it not correct whoso comes here forget caste, creed, religion, all the differences? The Swami is not here. He is omnipresent, is very much present by the very fact you will not find anywhere in the world itself today. Today, before coming on the topic itself, I'll be failing on my duty if I don't express my gratitude to Swami. He has changed my life, he has transformed my life, and what I have got is what he has given to me. Every time when avatar comes, people don't have faith basically, especially Kali Age, because so many persons are coming, imitating, doing things to look as if he's God. So when real God comes, people have doubts. I also had some doubts. But I'm not entering into that. It will take a very long time. If I go on telling details, how I got confidence, it may be another occasion to tell. But how he converted gradually, I never asked anything from Swami when I had any occasion. When I was just an advocate at that time, I came to know about Swami that he declared himself as avatar of Lord Shiva. He, after 1962, getting paralytic attack, recovering, made declaration why he has come, because he has given promise to Bharadwaj Rishi, he'll come as Shirdi Sai, Sat Sai, Prem Sai. So I have feeling he's really Lord Shiva who's come on earth. Swami cannot speak such a thing in a false way. So I was only once I had occasion, I was in Patna. I had occasion, I was in Patna. Coming, my feeling was, can I see Swami from a close distance? My thought was inside my mind. We have heard Swami creating vibhuti. He's giving charan spurs to so many persons. Can I see closely Swami at all? That's all coming in my mind. When I reached the place, it's a golfing place. The big pandal was there. I could get seat at the last board. Very well, we saw at least, we'll have the darshan of Swami at least on this day. So Swami came, cutting short, he gave darshan, he made speech, some of the things important he did. But people started going back. I also had at least, could not get close darshan, but I was seeing at least Swami. When everybody went back, I just, myself, my wife was there, a small little daughter who was 4 or 5 years old. Let us see where Swami is staying. It's very nearby in Golfing, there's a house where he was staying there. I went near it, saw this is the house where Swami is there. How happy are the person where Swami is inside it. The darbhan of the gate man was standing there. He just opened the gate for me, you may come in. I was a little stunned, I'm not invited. Should I go inside it? But he said, you're coming? I was a little surprised. I did go. But my heart was throbbing because person who's inside may not say, why you have come without invitation? I had no invitation. However, I went in the veranda, we turned left, there was a room, big drawing room. I entered, Swami was looking, talking to only 10 to 12 person. I was surprised. Hari, what a miracle. I am seeing Swami so closely. I thought, immediately, though I am still waiting for a few minutes, I may not be asked to go out of this place. But nobody said anything. My thought came back. How happy I am to see Swami so close. Could we not get his charan when we have come so much? You will be surprised within seconds Swami came near us and gave us his charan immediately. My third thought was, you've given Swami everything. I do not want. I've seen Swami, can you please give vibhuti to my wife and to my daughter, not to me. You'll be surprised, he did come. And creative vibhuti gave to my wife and to my little daughter, not to me, and went back. This was your first experience. Swami, I'll only cut short only few. I have a number of incidences, but it will take me too long. Another thought I'll tell you. When we are coming to Puttaparthi, only feeling was, I never asked Swami, if he is Shiva, he's come incarnation, Lord Shiva. If a person gets Shivling and do puja of Shivling, what a fortunate person it would be to have Shivling from Lord Shiva's hand. The Shivlings are everywhere. When Lord Shiva's come back, can I have Shivling? But the thought was unnecessarily dissolved. Nothing happened. We were surprised in the very first, that visit, Swami called for the interview. We had interview, and the very first interview, Swami created a Shivling and gave it to me. Take it, do puja and do drinking every day. That I am doing from that day till this day. Swami, therefore what I am saying, never ask, Swami said, anything from Lord. Lord knows everything. When we ask, that will be limitation of our thoughts. That will not be what really you could get much better. Therefore it is best thing, only pray God, think God, speak, and probably you get there. One of another, his omnipresent, only I'll relate that, though shortly I tell you, he cured my father who got ulcer. Doctor said, unless get operated, it will not be your dangerous in your life. Because 3 times bleeding he had. And Swami in Whitefield, creative vibhuti gave to my mother and father. And when he was admitted, doctor said, no need because no spot were found where it was said to be operated. Same thing, my wife also got admitted that doctor was coming day and night only to give injection in the young age. I was a little surprised. Swami only came in the dream, and dream said, only distribute because there used to be bhajan in my house every week. You only distribute, I know you're in trouble, don't worry. She distributed next bhajan next week, and she did not have the attack also. My daughter, who got severe heart problem, even doctors of Puttaparthi said, she can't survive an operation. She will not be able to survive, it's such a bad state. But Swami completely, not only cured, but even she's working normally, everything has become, she's absolutely normal. But this is a very passing phase. I know only one small thing I won't say, which I heard, his omnipresent. One of the young, there was one couple from Canada, a Canadian citizen, they were going in front of us when I was in Puttaparthi, and my daughter wanted, then I asked him, tell us your experience with Swami, only one thing. He told one incident, I'm only telling that, therefore I'll cut short before coming to the main topic itself. He said, tell me your experience at least. He said that one, on the Christmas day, they were Christians, on a Christmas day they got the interview. Swami asked them in the review, Today you ask me anything. This is your God's day. What you will ask, I'll give you. This is Swami, you have given us everything. I do not need anything. Swami again repeated, I'm again asking, you can ask anything this day, I'll give you. Then the wife only said very simple thing. You have only one son, kindly bless my son. The matter ended. We thought what a simple thing was asked, and the matter, they came back. Then he said, when he went back to Canada, my son was excited. He was working in Canadian Air Force. He was very much excited. When he reached, what is the matter? He said, Swami came and blessed me. Go, what? Where did he bless you? When I was on duty. When? On Christmas Day. No. You must be dreaming. Christmas Day we were with Swami at Puttaparthi. You must be dreaming. No. Swami really came and blessed me at the airport when I was on duty. When I asked what was the time, it was the same time when my wife asked. This is saying, bless my son. And at the same time, Swami went there in Kerala, blessed him. To have absolute faith, we have great obligations. When Swami gives us, we have greater obligation to pay back the same thing. If you are getting continuously what we want, Swami has given the millions and millions. But if we don't pay back the obligation, He wants your own inner journey, your self-purification and service to the mankind. If you don't do, then you are only enjoying as you are enjoying the world itself. I will tell you today, the world is passing through a stage of violence, terrorism, corruption, factionalism. This is the day, yesterday, Justice Dalbir Bhandari in the Judicial Court of Justice said in his speeches, and quoting someone, where there are injustices, the justice is in threat. Wherever there are injustices, the justice is in threat. I call taking that to today, justice in threat also. Because injustice is rampant all over. You must have read only yesterday. Even Attorney General of India and the Supreme Court made an argument. There's hardly any week where crimes and mass murders are not continuing in the country. This is a time judiciary has to play a very important role. Judiciary has played an important role in the past. It's one of the pivots in anything right from independence till this day. And this is time judiciary has to play a very important role. And I think that is the reason today judiciary has collecting in this auditorium to play back what Swami want. And that is the only answer for judicial functioning, only answer for peace in the world itself. When you think of a judicial system, what is the system? How is it come? Dispensation of justice is only prerogative of God. Only God gives justice. Nobody else gives justice. So God, when He gives justice, but that justice is eternal justice. That justice is always divinity, divine justice. He is not only giving justice to human being. He is doing justice to whole globe, whole universe. Everything moving under the law. There is nothing which is beyond the law. Law is so rampant. Is there anything on earth which is not governed by law? Even take inanimate things. Take, for example, salt. It is an inanimate thing. But it is law. It consists of one valency of sodium and one valency of chlorine. That makes sodium chloride, make it law. Unless that combination is there, it won't be a salt. Nitric acid. One valency hydrogen, one valency nitrogen, and three valencies oxygen constitute nitric acid. I'm saying not everything, look to anything, air, water, so everything is governed by law. But God dispenses justice, but when human being came on earth, many day-to-day problem was to be there. Somebody has to do. So ultimately, in the olden days, kings were dispensing justice. But king did not have the purity because more attached to the worldly thing, they already have some recognize saints and sages with a purative mind, because justice can only be, unless there is inner purity, justice can't be done. So kings always had some saint or big realized rishis. Dashrath had Vashishtha. Even Raja Janak had Ashtavrat and many others. But that went on when the king system also started dissolving. Then came our judicial system, because social functioning has to be through day to day. So we are the descendant of God, justice. From God to rishis, then come to judicial system. If we don't perform with that purity, justice will be paper justice. So the greatest importance, when we are entrusted with the job of rendering justice, the justice is to be with a purity of mind. If there is any inkling of doubt in our mind, it won't be a true justice. So while performing this, you have to say, we are the inheritors of God. We are the dispenser of justice, and that impurity has to build up within inside. The God, in fact, question of definition of law is concerned. Just has said, he has defined law. I may tell you, that is also one of the definitions of law. But it is very difficult to define, because law is so rampant. Law is really eternal law, divinity law, natural law, and human-made law. So this law, that's what somebody has said, law is as abstruse, as indefinable as God. So in fact, if that definition, you cannot really say so, the law can be defined. I'll only cut short with the limitation of time, many things I wanted to say today. But one thing has to come to mind, that unless we travel inside, our main enemy is not outside. We are looking to everything outside, external, but under the six enemies, kama, krodha, moha, lobha, mad, matsara. Kama is lust and desire. Krodha is anger. Moha is attachment. Lobha is greed. Mad is ego. Matsara is jealousy. These are the six enemies within us. And we have to help. There's also help inside it. The Swami has given the five basic things, as you know. So the struggle is inside us. Unless we are able to conquer the sixth enemy, we are not able to succeed. Our external searching is a mistake. We are always looking, whole body, whole system has been made in society to maintain the body. But only for one purpose, to realize the self. The journey is I to I. I will attach to the body is ahankar. I will attach to soul internally. That is really I'm Brahma. So just turning all those karmakand is there to tune in to get the truth itself. There's one small story, a very small one. The lady, an old lady, was searching a needle she lost in the hut. But she was searching, not able, went on the street, searching there. Somebody said, "What are you searching here?" "I'm searching my needle." "Where you lost it?" "I lost it in my hut." "Why are you searching the street?" He said, "Fool, the light is here. Why should I search there when light is here?" So what is happening? When you're external, when you go outside, you're so much glamoured. That old lady, you're not searching what is inside really. If you travel inside, the needle will be available. If you go inside, all jewels and all answers are within us. If you are not able to do it. That is one of the very important aspects. Our internal journey for very important to achieve anything in life or for this system. I'll also say the spirit, we have thought there's something inside us, the soul is the spirit. And the journey is, if you reach that soul, Vivekananda has also said, if I take another but I'll not eat anything. Because the struggle is mind in front is the five senses, karmendriya and gyanendriya. Behind is the power of discrimination, the intellect, and the last is chaitanya. Chaitanya is the soul. So if you are able to transcendent control the senses and go back and reaches really the chaitanya, all that is God. Swami says God is inside you. That chaitanya is itself is a God. Swami has once very interesting definition. which I heard fortunately when I was attending a summer course in Whitefield. Swami defined, Swami said, God is equal to soul. God equal to soul. Soul plus ego is man. Soul plus ego is man. Man minus ego is soul. Man minus ego is soul. Soul is equal to God. Only we have to eliminate that ego. That is an obstacle in our way. The moment you reach the Chaitanya, the God, you are yourself a God. You have all the achievement in your life. The spirit feeling is the most important feeling there. I'll also tell you the basic one or two things, quotation which is very important. Why we are going outward only? The another story which Swami said, a person once, after leaving the body, he has done good work, some bad work. So he has to go sometime for hell, sometime he'll go to the heaven. So he was asked, where do you want to go first? He said, can I have vision? Said, yes. He was taken shortly. He went to the heaven, very peaceful, smiling, beautiful scenery, all the quiet was there. He saw it. All that. Then he was taken to hell. There's a big gate on which the people dancing, music, enjoying, band, baja, working, full of light. Huh? Is this hell gate? Yes, sir. I don't want heaven. Give me everything on hell. I'll go in hell. He was put all right. When he went inside, he had a different picture. What is this? Inside is something different. You are tortured. What everything? He said, that is my advertising agency. Today life, the external injury, is really advertising or censor to be drawn. Unless you completely scan it, finish it, you will not be able to get peace. And that is the reason we have to do. I'll only quote, because time is so short, I'll only quote two of the great jurists, one from India and other outside. Just to relate, you must have heard Palkiwala. Palkiwala, one of the great jurists of this country, most judicial fraternity member, knows it. But what he has said and what he has written in the volume Golden Age in 1979, he said, his quote is speaking about Puttaparthi, speaking about the students of Puttaparthi. He said, Bhagwan Baba's great perception enabled him to look at the spirit, the universe, and the spiritual values which alone can regenerate this nation. The whole nation should be grateful to such a great moral and spiritual force who has dedicated his whole life to the service of mankind. And that is why he is sought after by millions. The strength of our country lies in this spontaneous realization of the supremacy of the spirit over the material prosperity. We look for material prosperity. Is not important. Status, money, all comes and goes. That is only formally formulated for living, but objective to realize yourself. He further says, this country has more than 100 universities and about 3,000 colleges with more than 2.5 million students entering their portals every year. But there is none which is of a higher standard than Sri Satsai College of Puttaparthi. He said further, I consider the students of Satya Sai College as the greatest asset to the field of education. They are the young men and women who can build together the India of our dream. The impact of Bhagwan Baba has endowed them with all the virtues of true education. The great responsibility lies on the students of this institution. I am saying all the institutions, not this, all the institutions Swami has created for this itself. Second, I'll quote everybody at the judicial fraternity knows Lord Dennings. He's one of the judges in England. Normally, the feeling of soul, spirit is not very much in the West. But what he realized after having been in office for a long time, I'm quoting him that itself. He gave this speech just shortly after his retirement as well. This was made on 5th December 1982. He said, the fundamental point in my experience is that there is spirit in man, quite separate from body and mind, and which, when it reaches the highest, is but the reflection of spirit of God. All experience convinced me, not only God is ever present, but it is by the contact with the spirit of God, the spirit of man reaches its highest. This is the greatest. I am saying, all we might think we have done this, we have reached this height. This is all the spirit of God functioning within us. We have to tap that spirit. We think we are doing it, but we are not tapping the very spirit within us. And that is very important. And also, one thing more I want to tell. It's very important for judges at least. One incident written in the book, Philip Crystal has written many books on Swami, from Philip Crystal. Everybody knows Puttaparthi, she's been coming till recently, now she passed away after 92 years of age. She's a great devotee of Swami. In the book she's written very interesting incidents which will very relevant for judicial functioning. She said once when I was going to have darshan, I got a dream of Swami in Bangalore. Dream was, he saw people are waiting for Swami to come in Bangalore. The ladies' rows were separate, gents were separate. On the ladies' side, a lady was there, the small child on the lap. It looked like he's a polio patient. Looking at that, she was waiting for Swami to bless the child. The moment Swami was coming, we were all looking at him. Swami came on the lady's side first, but just two ladies before Swami turned on the side and went away. But dream was broken, so it was a dream. But when she reached Whitefield, she saw the same thing, the lady, same face, same ladies there. Then she was watching what is going to happen. Then what happened? Swami was coming, and he saw exactly the same thing. Swami came, but two ladies before, Swami turned to the other side, the ladies were also there. Philip Crystal was sitting the other side, she said. I just stood up, Swami. She said, Swami said, yeah, I just want to know, Swami. That lady is waiting for a long time. Just turn this side. Do you want to know? She said. The child was a judge in the previous birth. The mother was his friend. He actually influenced the judge to give a judgment by which one family was ruined. So today, judge is actually the polio patient throughout the life, and the friend is carrying the like a mother. This is the consequence of karma. He says, Swami, the karma, yes, karma fall. So what we have to always say, whenever we do anything, judicial or any functioning, we see the consequences as different as anything else. And lastly, before concluding, I'll only tell Edison's story and nothing more. I would have said many things, but time is too short. And the Edison story, this was a great scientist. He was the person, he's given all light, whatever we are having today. And while traveling in the train, a ticket collector came. He was searching in pocket all along, but he was not able to get his ticket. He opened his box all along. He got disturbed, totally bewildered, what will happen? The ticket collector probably looked at him and realized, may I know, are you Mr. Edison? Yes, I says, do not worry. I know you got ticket, you don't worry. He looked at him and said, I'm not worried for that. I'm worried unless I get my ticket, I do not know where I have to go. A great scientist lost his way, bewildered, because he was the wrong way, lost. So what would happen if humanity goes the wrong way? If you change your path, change everything, do everything what Swami says, your inner travel, you get everything. Thank you very much. Sayonara.
A big round of applause for our revered elder. May I now invite our All India President and Sri Naganandji to kindly come forward. If we recollect the talk of Honorable Justice Ibn Venkatchalaya yesterday, he said he came to Swami's lotus feet 76 years ago. Since yesterday, we have heard several speakers who have said that it is their great fortune that this is their first visit to Prashanti Nilayam. The time, the date of your sannidhi with Swami is determined by Him. So it's my great honor and privilege. There are so many judges from across the country who are here for this two-day conference. I invite Shri Ratnakarji and our All India President to come forward and to felicitate our honorable judges from all over India who are here. I will read out the names and I'll request each one of them. There's a flower bud ready. Please take one and come forward for the felicitation. Shri R.S. Jha, High Court, Madhya Pradesh. Shri K. Kannan, the Chairman of the National Railways Claims Tribunal, Principal Seat, New Delhi. Honorable Justice T.B. Radhakrishnan, Chief Justice of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Please come forward, sir. Honorable Justice Sri Ram Subramaniam, Judge, High Court of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Honorable Justice N. Kutishwar Singh, Judge, High Court of Manipur. Please put your hands together for as they arrive. Honorable Justice C. Hari Shankar, Judge, High Court of Delhi. Honorable Justice M. Karpagavanagam, the former Chief Justice of Jharkhand and Chairperson of APTEL. His Excellency, Mr. Gudmundur Eriksson, Judge, International Tribunal for the Law of Seas. Shri Chandrasekhar, Judge, High Court of Delhi. Justice K. Ramamurthy, a long-time devotee and judge, former judge of the Delhi High Court. Honorable Justice Shri Chala Kundama Ram from the High Court of Andhra Pradesh. Honorable Justice Shri A. Hari Prasad, High Court of Kerala. Honorable Justice Shri S. V. Bhatt from the High Court of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Honorable Justice Shri P.B. Suresh, High Court of Kerala. Honorable Justice Shri Devan Ramachandran from the High Court of Kerala. Honorable Justice Shri Ashok Menon. From the High Court of Kerala. Honorable Justice Shri P. Keshava Rao from the High Court of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Honorable Justice Dr. B. Sivashankar Rao from the High Court of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Honorable Justice Shri Ashwini Kumar from the High Court of Allahabad High Court. Honorable Justice Shri Vivek Kumar from the High Court at Allahabad. Honorable Justice Shri Arijit Banerjee from the High Court of West Bengal, seat Calcutta. Honorable Justice Shri Arindam Mukherjee from the High Court with seat at Calcutta. Honorable Justice Shri Joy Malia Bagchi from the High Court with seat at Calcutta. Honorable Justice Shri H.G. Ramesh from the High Court of Karnataka. Honorable Justice Shri Arvind Kumar from the High Court of Karnataka and Honorable Justice Shri R. Devadas from the High Court of Karnataka. I'm just going to call them. May I now invite Srimati Kamala Pandeyaji and Srimati Neeta Khanna to kindly come forward and felicitate. The Honorable Lady Judges from across the country.
Somen Singh from Calcutta has left.
Okay.
This is Somen Singh.
Honorable Justice Pratibha M. Singh. from the High Court of Delhi. Honorable Justice Honorable Justice Sangeeta Dhingra Sehgal from the High Court of Delhi. Justice Manjula Das, kindly come forward. May I request Ms. Pinky, the judge from Delhi, to kindly come forward. And may I request Justice Sangeeta Dhingra to come forward to receive on behalf of Ms. Ravinder Kaur, who is a member of the Central Administrative Tribunal located in Mumbai. Kindly take it on her behalf. She had to leave under some exigency this morning. Kindly receive this on her behalf. Thank you. May I once again invite our All India President to felicitate Mr. Justice Soman Sen from High Court of West Bengal. Please put your hands together. He's a second generation Sai devotee as well. And who? Justice Hari Haran Nair from the High Court of Kerala. Justice Shankar Narayan from the Honorable Justice Shankar Narayan from Andhra Pradesh in Telangana. Justice B. Rajendran from the High Court of Tamil Nadu. Justice Periya Kurupiya from the High Court of Tamil Nadu, seat in Rajat Bhargava. Justice N.V. Subramaniam, also from the Chennai High Court. Thank you. Justice Rajat Bhargava from the former judge from the Rajasthan High Court and also an ardent devotee of Swami. Justice Rajiv Bhalla, former judge, High Court of Punjab and Haryana. Justice Nawab Singh from the High Court, former judge, High Court of Punjab and Haryana. Honorable Justice Vivek Kumar Singh from the High Court with a seat at Allahabad. And Shri Ajay Kumar, member of the Central Administrative Tribunal at the Principal Bench in New Delhi. As I mentioned yesterday, various legal luminaries, chief justices of various high courts, judges of various high courts, came to Swami's lotus feet during his sojourn on earth. Late Chief Justice of India, Shri M.M. Punchi, was one of such devotees of Swami. Swami dearly loved him. And we have amidst us today second generation from his family. I will request them to kindly rise as I take their name both on both sides of the aisle and with claps kindly acknowledge them. They are amidst us. Shrimati Madhu Punchi and Shri Pavanmut Neja, who is the son-in-law of Shri M.M. Punchi. Shrimati Padma Khastagir from the High Court at Calcutta was another person very dear to Swami. She was a member, first lady member of Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. We have in our midst her daughter, Shri Suniti Khastagir. Kindly rise. Put your hands together. Thank you. Carrying on with the theme of the conference and the session this morning on Dharma and the rule of law, it's my honor and privilege to invite Justice Sri Ravi Shankar Jha, the sitting judge of the Madhya Pradesh High Court. Brothers and sisters, like so many of us who are here today, he first came to Prashant. He is also a long-time, long-standing devotee of Swami. Apart from that, he served as a Seva Dal with the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization for many years and continues to be in service of Swami till today. He worked for 6 years with Honorable Justice P.P. Nawlekar till he was elevated as a judge of the Madhya Pradesh High Court. He was a government advocate for the state till March 1994 and then became the youngest ever Deputy Advocate General, the term that he served from the year 1996 to July 2005. Later, he was designated as a senior advocate of the High Court of Madhya Pradesh and elevated as a judge of the High Court of Madhya Pradesh on 18th of October 2005 and is the chairman of the High Court Legal Services Committee of the High Court of Madhya Pradesh at Jabalpur. He is also the judge in charge of the Madhya Pradesh State Judicial Academy. My great honor and privilege to invite Shri Ravi Shankar Jha, the Honorable Judge Supreme of Madhya Pradesh. Please, put your hands together for Justice Jha.
Naram chayav narottamam devim sarasvatim chayav tato jayam udireti vaangme manishri pratishtita manume vachi prashti. A thousand pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Baba. Since yesterday we have been hearing great luminaries in the legal field and otherwise who have been coming here and telling you about their experiences with Baba, the divine blessings that they have received from him, and what all Baba has done for them during their lives. As Pandyaji says, Hari Ananta, Hari Katha Ananta. My story is the same, but I've been given a different task. So I'd sum up and just say that if I'm standing here before you today, it's because of Baba's blessings. Since yesterday, we've been hearing about human values in the legal field and the legal profession. And consistently, everybody, all great scholars and thinkers have been telling you that one must have pity, compassion, love for your fellow humans. And that love without compassion, love without pity, love without kindness is no law at all. Well, dharma and the rule of law is a little different story. And I might ostensibly sound a discordant note. Wherever such consensus on human values occur, it's inevitable that we reach the conclusion of compassionately, benevolently, dispense with justice, and that one must have pity, compassion, sympathy, kindness, etc. And these are all essential values that a person must possess. Dharma and the rule of law is a very vast subject, and I confess that with my limited faculties and abilities, to compress it into a meaningful capsule within the short time is beyond my abilities. I will just talk to you about a very small part of this field, and that is the dharma, or the principles, the precepts of dharma, which are necessary, which should be in the mind of those who are involved in the process of adjudication, that is judges and administrators who are involved in the justice delivery system. To my mind, this is an important issue which I felt I must raise before all of you. Because one has to understand the difference between human feelings and emotions and human values. Pity, sympathy, kindness, compassion, etc. are wonderful human values, human feelings. But when it comes to human values of satya, dharma, shanti, prema and ahimsa in the field of law, one has to be very cautious. If somebody were to slap me on one cheek, my individual human values and human feelings would say, if I am a good individual, I forgive you, slap me on the other cheek. But if I was sitting in the chair of a judge and somebody were to come and say, punish B because he slapped me on one cheek, he has committed a crime, I would be doing an injustice if I say, forgive him and let him slap you on the other cheek. It will be a mockery of law. The immediate hue and cry would be, is this justice? Is this the rule of law? So while this luxury of having pity, kindness, compassion as an individual is available, probably it would be very difficult to say that such a luxury is available to somebody who sits in the chair of a judge or is an adjudicator. There is no two-line definition of dharma in the entire dharma shastras. And perhaps the best attempt at explaining it is in the 1 lakh shlokas of the Mahabharata. And when you study it, you find that there are hundreds of times of dharmas. I will confine myself just to differentiate between the two. Vyaktigat dharma, individual dharma, and Raj dharma. What you do as an individual, you probably cannot do when you sit on the chair of an adjudicator. The entire Mahabharata is a classic example of this. Dhritarashtra is a king. He's an adjudicator. He's a judge. But he is blinded literally and otherwise by his feelings of love, compassion for his children. He cannot see anything wrong in his children. He forgives all their misdeeds. He is party to them. So much so that he puts his feelings above his duty as a judge. He is so carried away by his vyaktigat dharma that he forgets his raj dharma. He keeps on committing one mistake after the other, one mistake after the other, continues to commit adharma, as a result of which you have the great Mahabharata. He is the biggest villain of this piece, and it is because of the adharma which he commits, because of the blindness towards love and for his children, that you have the Mahabharata. Dharma eva hato hanti dharmo rakshati rakshita. You destroy dharma, it destroys you. You protect it, it protects you. I do not have the erudition to, on my own, give you an exposition of the subject. So I have chosen a few instances from this wonderful epic, this itihas, which is in fact an itihas written only to teach others, tell others what is dharma in the rule of law. Dhritarashtra is not alone. He is the villain of the Mahabharata. But for all you know, if it would not have been for God, Lord Krishna, Arjun would have turned out to be the biggest villain. Why? When he is standing in the Dharma Kshetra, in the midst of war, in the thick of things, his emotions overcome him. His feeling of compassion, pity. Why should I kill my brother, my loved grandfather, my guru? Why should I fight for them, for this piece of land? It's better that I abandon this than fight this war. He was fortunate that he had Krishna with him. And we are fortunate that we have Baba with us. Immediately, Krishna gives the divine discourse of the Gita. He says, abandon this emotion. What is this unmanliness? When you are standing right in the battlefield, you are overcome by emotions. Shun your emotions. Fight this war. It is a war between dharma and adharma. And dharma has to win. I am on your side only because I feel you are on the side of dharma. If you do this adharma, I will abandon you. You see, yesterday we had so many of our scholars, legal luminaries, quote from the Gita. What are the qualities of a good person? Love, compassion, etc. These are all part of the Gita. But do not forget that all these qualities are enumerated by the same Krishna who is asking Arjuna to abandon his human emotions and fight the war to uphold dharma. And here you have to understand the difference between human feelings and emotions and Raj Dharma. Krishna says, be a good human being. But being a good human being does not mean that you abandon your dharma on the basis of your human emotions and let adharma win. So fight the war. The Gita is a book which tells you what is your duty as an administrator and what is... Arjuna was not an ordinary man. He was a king. The Pandavas were fighting on his shoulders. He was a commander-in-chief of the Pandava army. This is the distinction that we must remember. But then why is it that people, such good human beings, people like Arjun, also get disillusioned? What happens? Krishna says, Devi Hesha Durmai Mama Maya Duratyaya. He says, it is the combination of your five senses with my Durmai divine Maya that creates this illusion and delusion of a mind, and where you are not able to distinguish between dharma and adharma, and ultimately result at times in doing adharma, feeling that you are doing dharma. At one place in the Mahabharata, Dhritarashtra tells Yudhishthira that, look, you have been forgiving the Kauravas for everything. From poisoning Lakshagraha to Dut Krina, disrobing of Draupadi, you have forgiven them for everything. Now when they are not giving you your land back, why are you insisting on fighting? Why are you doing this adharma? You are such a good person. You are loving, you are kind, you are compassionate. Why should you now insist that you should fight? Why should you demand that this land which would ultimately lead into such a big war? And Yudhishthir, who is Dharmaraj, says, Yatra dharmo dharma rupani vibrat, kratasno dharma drashyate adharma rupa, tatha dharmo dharayan dharma rupa, vidvan sastam samprapashyanti budachya. He says, at times adharma looks like dharma, and dharma looks like adharma. And in some other instances, dharma appears in its true form. But it is only those who are wise, who are calm, who are not moved by emotions, that are able to discern between dharma and adharma and follow the path of dharma. What then is this Rajdharma that should be followed by a judge, a king? In the Shanti Parva, Bhishma says, Dharnat dharma mityahu dharmo dharayate praja. Yat sa dharan sanyuktam sa dharma iti nishchaya. It means that which sustains is dharma. That which leads to the upliftment and betterment of the society and people as a whole is certainly dharma. And these are the principles which need to be remembered when a person sits on the seat of a judge. You have all read Julius Caesar. There's a wonderful piece there in that play where the conspirators just before assassinating Julius Caesar gather around him and say, "You are great, you are all forgiving, you are all loving Caesar. Pardon Metellus Cimber's brother. Pardon him. You are so kind." They touch his feet, they kiss his hand, they kneel before him. And you know what Shakespeare through Julius Caesar says. He says, "These couching and these lowly courtesies might fire the blood of ordinary men and turn the law of preordinance and first decree into the law of children. All those who sit in the chair of the judge are not men of ordinary blood. These lowly courtesies and couchings cannot fire their blood. They have to be steady. They have to implement the law as it is." Yesterday, a wonderful shloka was cited before you from the Ishopanishad by Justice Roy. Astu dharma, yastu sarvani bhutani atmanyevanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu atmanam tato na vijugutsate. Look at divinity in everybody. Isha vasvedam sarvam. Look at divinity in everybody. If this ideal situation existed in this world, probably we would not have needed either law or dharma. Because unfortunately, every person develops a bit of a partial blindness, cataract or something when he is viewing others. In some he views divinity, in some he views nothing. And this is where the law comes in, and this is where the judge comes in. Dhritarashtra views divinity in his sons. He does not view any divinity in the Pandavas. So though this is a very wonderful concept which has to be developed, inculcated by every human being, his vyaktigat dharma. But when a person sits on the chair of a judge, he has to administer law in accordance with dharma. He cannot afford to go by his feelings. The law may be compassionate. The law may be framed for the benefit of others. But the judge cannot interpret on his own a law which is otherwise strict to make it compassionate. The IPC says murder is a crime. If somebody has committed a murder, a judge has to punish him for having committed murder. He cannot say, "Pardon. I as a human being cannot do anything, no harm to anybody. I cannot sentence you to death. I cannot sentence you to jail. I have pity. I have compassion in me. So I won't punish you." This luxury that is available to an individual is not available to a judge. And that is why I said they are not people whose blood can be fired by these ordinary lowly couchings and courtesies. The dharma of a judge is very difficult to follow. And all those involved in the justice dispensation system have to go through this torture every day when they sit on the chair, and they have to fight against their own emotions to uphold the law. There is no human being who can not feel pity for somebody who comes before him. Everybody feels it. But the judge is put through the torture of having to fight his own feeling, human feelings, to administer law, a day in and day out. And that is the dharma of a judge. You are all blessed. You have been working with Bhagwan Baba. There are several students who are studying here, several alumni who are there. All of them would with one voice vouch for the fact that Swami was the mother of all mothers, the father of all fathers, the guru of all gurus, the protector of all protectors. And yet, all of you would be the first to acknowledge the fact that as an administrator, there was zero tolerance in him for indiscipline. Zero tolerance. On the one hand, he is the very embodiment of love and compassion. On the other, as an administrator, he's the strictest headmaster available. Strictest. Because he had the ability not just to look at what your physical actions were, but what was going on in the monkey mind. And this is where, this distinction is the one that I'm trying to draw out for all of you. That as an individual, your dharma is different. As a judge, as an adjudicator, as a person involved in the justice delivery system, you have to follow a very different set of rules. And only then can the rule of law be upheld. Not otherwise. Every judge at times is faced with compassionate pleas. I'll tell you an instance. In the Mahabharata, when the ultimate battle between Karna and Arjuna is going on, you all know the story. Karna, the chariot wheel of Karna gets stuck in the ground. And Karna gets off the chariot, trying to remove it, extricate it. And at that time he says, Arjun, you are a warrior. You know the dharma of war. A chariot never fights with somebody who is standing on the ground. You are a righteous, honest man. Wait, let me extricate this wheel. And then I'll fight with you. We'll continue the fight. Fortunately, Krishna is again there with Arjuna. Immediately he stands up and he recounts from Lakshagraha to Dhutkira to the disrobing of Draupadi. Standing there and he says, and after enumerating each instance he says, Taute dharmas tathagata. Where had your dharma gone when you were doing this? When you assassinated practically the son of Arjun, I'm not able to, Abhimanyu. Where had it gone? Where was this dharma of war that you are talking about? Where did it go? Taute dharmas tathagata. Where did this dharma go? And he says, Arjun, don't be moved by this plea. This is the time, strike. So that dharma is upheld. Vyas, after writing the entire Mahabharata, has summed up what he has said in 1 lakh shloka in the Bharat Savitri. He says, Na jatu kaman bhayan lobha dharmam tyajya jivitasyapi hetu. Nityo dharma sukh dukhe tvanitya. Jivo nityo hetu rasya tvanitya. It means, come what may, never abandon dharma for greed, fear, emotions, anything, even if there is a threat to your life. Because the emotion on the basis of which forms a reason for your deviating from the path of dharma is short-lived. You are angry today, you won't be angry tomorrow. You would desire something today, you will not desire it tomorrow. Your emotions are transient, but dharma is nitya. It is constant, unchanging. The body which you protect and for protecting of which you break dharma is also transient, he says. Jivo nityo, jivatma is nitya. Heturasya, this body is anitya. So even for this body, even for protecting your life, do not abandon the path of dharma. And this is the importance of dharma. This is the reason why we are today talking about dharma. This is the reason why Swami, time and again, has extorted this. I think, I'm sorry, but I'll just sum up what I've just told you. The dharma that is of a person who's involved in the justice delivery system. In the background of what I've told you, there is no room for a judge for human emotions and frailties in implementing dharma. Without dharma, there can be no rule of law. That only when the rule of law conforms to dharma will it sustain and result in the well-being and upliftment of the country and all the people, and under no circumstances. And therefore, the dharma of law, which is duratyaya, has to be understood in this context. And in this vast 1 lakh shloka of literature that is available to all of us, which should be read by all of us, and if it would have been read by all of us, perhaps we would have been much more wiser. I feel blessed, greatly blessed by this opportunity of having to address you here at the feet of Swami, on the seat of learning and the seat of dharma. It is an opportunity that is devoutly wished by everybody. It is given and granted to few. I am actually blessed by this opportunity given to me. I thank you. I thank all the organizers. I pray at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Baba. Samasta loka sukhino bhavat.
May I invite our All India President, Shri Prasad Rao Garu, to come forward with Brother Ryoko Hira, both members of the Central Trust, to come and felicitate Honorable Justice Ravi Shankar Jha from the Madhya Pradesh High Court. Next speaker on the topic of dharma and the rule of law is Honorable Justice Shri K. Kannan. Shri K. Kannan was elevated to the High Court of Chennai on July 31st, 2008. He served as a judge of the Punjab and Haryana High Court from the year 2008 to 2016 and is currently the chairman of the Railways Claims Tribunal at the principal bench at New Delhi. He has authored several books on law meant for legal practitioners and has edited some of the popular works of Mullah, Dr. Modi and Farooq. He was awarded the Weinstein Fellowship on Mediation, San Francisco, United States in the year 2017 and has an abiding interest in fostering litigation-free environment and promoting mediation as an important alternative dispute resolution tool. Shri Kannan became the first judge to voluntarily make public the list of his properties. He has advocated setting up of an in-house mechanism within the judiciary to regulate its conduct. His interests beyond the realm of the legal world are essentially writing, reading and listening to his favorite Carnatic music and the doyens there, Madurai Mani Ayer, Lal Gudi Jayaram, Bombay Jayashree and A.R. Rahman. His favorite book is Devyathan Kural, What Do You Care and What Other People Think About You. My great and honor and privilege to invite Mr. Justice K. Kannan to deliver his talk on Dharma and the Rule of Law.
Om Shri Sai Ram. May Bhagavan take pity and grace on me to be a speaker after my brother Jha. He had been outstanding in what he was conveying to you. Yesterday and today we have been talking about dharma and rule of law, and dharma is rule of law. Dharma is constitution. Rule of law is a set of rules. So it seemed like we were talking about two distinct things, like we always use a conjunction. Whenever we use expressions, words to make it with standalone phrases, good and bad, black and white, beauty and ugly. So that is one method of using a conjunction. Another is when we talk about the same thing, same issues, synonyms, like fair and lovely, black and beautiful. This dharma and the rule of law, if we are seeing as complementary, maybe there is something new to see. There is another way of seeing it. The dharma, which is so big, like what our brother said, if rule of law does not conform to dharma, dharma prevails. So when we talk about dharma and rule of law, we are talking about a situation where rule of law is completely subsumed in dharma. If it does not, there is a need to fight it. You can defy rule of law if there is something which is unjust, but you will not defy dharma, for dharma defines what is correct. What is righteousness? There have been several situations where the Supreme Court examined this concept. When we talk about chemistry, you don't go to a physics book. When you talk about dentistry, you don't talk about an ophthalmologist. When we're talking about dharma, we must be going to Dharma Shastras. Why Supreme Court? It's perhaps, as a dispenser of justice, what is it that we are seeing? How do things come about in court? How is the system of administration of justice done? By applying what principles? In some of the cases which were brought before the court, when I'm referring to them because unjust things are brought. For instance, in 2002, in Aruna Rai versus Union, a name probably sounds to you as a social activist and a great intellect. She had a problem. She said, national curriculum framework of school education has brought about several things which are unacceptable, which cannot stand the constitutional test. She said that the education policy framework encourages Vedic mathematics. It talks about Sanskrit as an alternate medium of instruction. It talks about, it encourages religious studies and the like. The Supreme Court said, all the things of what you say as unconstitutional really conform to dharma, and therefore we must have it, and therefore your PIL must be dismissed. What she was bringing to court as something which is unconstitutional was seen by court as expounding dharma, therefore we'll uphold it. There was another situation in Lal Nagji vs. Jayantilal, 1960. It was authored, the principal judgment was authored by Justice Gajendra Gadkar, who was a Sanskrit scholar. The point which was involved in the case was, what is the latitude of the discretion which a father has, and how does he bind by his debts to the son? The issue was, how can I say, not to go too much into law, but the pious obligation theory of what a son is bound by the father's debt was the question. And he found no difficulty at all, referred to all the dharmic texts, said how it is essential for every son to observe dharma, and if it is father's activity which has involved in some debts, the son is bound. Now, in 2005, there is an Hindu Succession Act which says the theory of pious obligation is hereby abolished. So what do we understand by this? There is a law which says now if a father contracts a debt and then finds that as a justification for executing a sale, the son could be saying it could bind your share, not my share, which was not possible before, which is possible now. And again, in 1974, my brother, the Honorable Chief Justice Andhra Pradesh, has come from Kerala, and there are quite a few brothers from Kerala. There is a law which was passed, which was abolition of Joint Family Act of 1974. How do you like it? Joint family must be abolished by law? Do we therefore see that this is, you can always give justification. You ask a lawyer, you ask a legislator who brought about that law, he will say, what we meant to do was that by abolishing this, we do not recognize the right of a son by birth. It is possible for you to even name it as a son being not right, abolition of right to birth act could have been just as well fine. But we say abolition of joint family act, as though joint family can be abolished by a law. And CAT Bijli Cotton, CAT versus Bijli Cotton was a case which talked about, again, dharma, there was a person who was selling his goods and would add also for charity. So the total price, what is it to be taxed? Is that component of what is added for charity to be also taxed? What was argued by the state was, the state said that charity is a very vague term. Dharma is a vague term, so therefore you cannot accept this. And cited a judgment of the Privy Council in 1899 in Ranchor Das, where the Privy Council was referring to Wilson's dictionary for dharma. If you must understand dharma, you should look at dharma shastras. You don't look at Wilson's dictionary for dharma. And where you found, he said this, the objects which can be considered to be meant by that word are too vague or uncertain for the administration of them to be under any control. This was the law which was being applied for a long time. Charity is too troublesome a word. Dharam is too vague an expression. Don't give any meaning to it when you are applying for the law to be seen in that context. I'm here to only point out that not at all times the rules of law or the legislation are dharmic. The problem is, however, we resort too many things, cite too many laws, and bring every matter to court as though courts have answers for every situation. You will know a lot of text on dharma was brought and cited in extenso in one judgment that went from Andhra Pradesh. In Andhra Pradesh, there was a legislation which was brought abolishing joint family, hereditary trustees, archakas. This abolition of Archakas Act was challenged, and the judgment was in Narayan Dikshitulu. It was a state where you had enormous issues of dharam which was examined. And I thought I would just make one reference for constraint of time. It summed up so beautifully in that judgment. After referring to large text, the Supreme Court said, though dharma is a word of wide meaning as to cover the rules concerning all matters such as spiritual, moral and personal, as also civil, criminal and constitutional law, it gives a precise meaning depending on the context in which it is used. Again, to be used in whatever time, when dharma is used in the context of duties of individual and powers of the king, it means constitutional law, Rajadharma. Likewise, when it is said Dharmarajya is necessary for the peace and prosperity for the people and for establishing an egalitarian society, the word Dharma in the context of word Rajya only means law, and Dharmarajya means rule of law and not rule of religion or a theocratic state. Vyavahara Dharma or Rajadharma evolved by society through the ages, which is binding both in the king, the ruler, and the rule, the ruled. Now, you will notice that we have talked about dharma. We have talked about dharma in a rule of law as meaning that which binds the ruler as well as the ruled. Because the Western thought was not that. It used to be said that the positivist theorists will say, who is the law? I am the law. That is, the king who declares that I am the law is the person who really gives away law. We did not believe like that. And therefore, when we talk about rule of law, you will, again, students of law are probably persons, when we cite in courts, we say, as though it was those principles which came from the West of what Lord Coke said or what Dicey wrote in the rule of law. There are three concepts which the rule of law invariably talks about. One, the supremacy of law. Two, the equality before law. And three, predominance of the legal spirit. I will not dilate on each one of them. Predominance of law, or what we understand as what is everything is to be done through law. It cannot be merely an arbitrary exercise. And therefore that takes us to the second concept of equality of laws, or what is everything to be done which is not arbitrary. The third is what is important, and there I will like to make just one statement and withdraw from the speech. It talks about the third thing is the predominance of legal spirit. This is understood as an access to court which is possible. The predominance of legal spirit must be one where a person who is imbued in legal spirit tries to ventilate his grievance through a court of law. He does not take the law into his own hands and then does something. Now, this has been understood in some ways, and this has come, it has gotten to be perverted now to mean that courts have every answer, and therefore I will take to court. And therefore, what are all the things which you are going to court? Because we need to know that by the rule of law was all illegal things done. We will know that Hitler probably took the whole world to the precipice of doom by a constitution, by a machinery of constitution. He said, this is what is law and this is what I am going to administer. We all know that emergency was declared under the constitution. ADM Jabalpur was decided at a time when the court said that you don't have a right to life when there is an emergency, state of emergency, as though my life depended on the constitution which gave me life. We were trying to therefore pervert issues for the sake of arguments, and it is all possible. There are so many lawyers here, we know. I've been a lawyer for a long number of years than as a judge, and therefore we know how we can always convolute things and make it seem like edible. And the important thing is to know, and as judges we must know, as lawyers we must know, that we don't have answers for everything. Now what are we deciding? Probably something of what Sister Pratibha talked about yesterday. She ran through the stages. She talked about the human value systems as changing over a period of time, and therefore dharma will also be applied differently at various times. Therefore the stone age of what killing is even not even an offense, not something wrong, was not adharmic. It was later became one. And therefore to that extent, we must recognize that you'll find some law and say, now there is a law and therefore it has to be accepted. To what extent we must conform, must go by, there are three tests, it is stated. One, that is Baba would give to us, there are ways by which it has to be done. He would say, you receive training, Baba's statement is, you must receive training under wise people, vidwans who are also imbued in dharma. In our modern management jargon, I would say, keep a proper role model. We can't, what are we talking about, vidwans? In this context, we'll have to understand it like that. Two, Baba would say, you must aspire to retain self-purification, atma-suddhi. And that is possible, and that is only through that instrument we'll be able to see what is correct, what is just, what is unjust. And to use the contemporary language, it must mean, spend time for contemplation. Yesterday when I was going to the museum there, there was the guide who was taking me there, he was telling me that there is a contemplation room. He also told me immediately, it is not meditation room, sir, it is contemplation. It is not meditation, it is contemplation, which is different. What all you went through, what you saw, how do you assimilate them, how do you absorb them, how do you remember and apply them in your life? And that is what all these other rooms showed to you. That is what Atma-Suddhi of what Baba says. Number three, you must realize the value of knowledge of the Vedas, the Veda Vidya, listen to the voice of God. In the modern context, I would say, direct attention to good conduct and do what our scriptures and religious texts teach us. The test is therefore, what our religious scriptures teach, how did they address a particular issue? It is the last thing Kanchi Holiness used to say, don't think conscience is the first answer to everything or what is correct. What do the scriptures say? What do the elders say? What did my guru say? Then you apply your conscience. That is the way you address them. One, two, three. Conscience is the last in that ladder. The rule of law, if it has to be seen, whether it is just or not, will be applied and seen through the prism of all these three things. The three sides of a prison are these. So, I was only thinking now, what are we seeing? How do we bring dharma into our lives? I thought most important for us is you'll have to find a connection to everything that you do to the society. That is the way we must understand. You must know what the tree breathes out, what we breathe out is what it takes in, and what it gives is what we take. What you hear is what I speak, and what I'm going to be hearing is what you're going to be speaking. You must see yourself as a speck in this continuum of human activity, and you must realize your worth by what you do to the society. That is your dharma. That subsumes the rule of law. If you are a lawyer, I would request, promote the cause of truth to our clients. I have ever a situation of seeing so many lawyers believing that anything can go, anything can sell in the court. And then modify things and then state untruth. It's fine, it's for law. Lawyer, you are a lawyer, so you must be telling lies. This is the way we have promoted our own perception to the people. That lawyers are advocates for truth is how we must behave. And for judges, it is essential for us to have the humility to know we don't have all answers. Let us not assume and take the conceit that we have understood better than our elders. That their knowledge was nothing, your knowledge through law, what you have seen is everything. It's not like that. That's why we are taking so many things of what would not otherwise be in quotes. Do I go to a temple? Do I take my sister to my temple? To which temple I could go like that? These are issues where we talk about a constitutional duty which makes reference to your duty to assimilate your culture and tradition. To what tradition I'm going to be subscribing to when I'm taking some kind of legislation, some kind of situations to court. And courts, to see everything through constitutionalism, gets to be a dangerous thing. So these are things which we must only by Atma Suddhi, by Atma Vichar, we will be able to get the answers. If you think every answer is to be found in the statute, if every answer is to be seen through the constitution book, through the provisions, if you don't understand them the way they should be understood, that is going to be a great danger. And therefore I would say, if you're a judge, please try the unearthing of truth and try and see whether parties can settle themselves. As lawyers, we'll also see that we will not take everyone to court. Taking them to court is not what a lawyer's job is. Our understanding of law must be, of all our laws, of what we will conform to must be dharma. And therefore, I will end with what Baba would say, dharma illumines the whole world. The word dharma means that which upholds. It is dharma that teaches the right of relationship between man and man, man and society, society and society. Dharma reveals to man through his heart what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false. It is dharma which promotes the welfare of the society. Dharma protects the protector. Dharma rakshati rakshitaha. The world cannot exist without dharma. Thank you very much.
A big round of applause, brothers and sisters. I'm going to invite our two very revered elders to come forward along with our All India President to felicitate Honorable Justice K. Kannan, Dr. Pandit, the former Vice Chancellor of Satyasai Institute of Higher Learning, please come forward, and Shri N. Ramani, our elder in the Satyasai organization, kindly come forward with All India President to felicitate Justice Kannan. Their President and Shri Ranaka to kindly come forward and felicitate former judge of the Punjab Haryana High Court, Honorable Justice Shri Rajiv Bhalla. Kamala Pandya and Shribati Ratnakar to kindly come forward and felicitate Honorable Justice Manjula Das from the High Court of Assam. brothers and sisters, we have come to the most precious moment of our entire conference. Yesterday, this souvenir was released to all the delegates who are attending this conference. I respectfully submit to all the delegates to kindly go through Bhagwan's discourse, which is on Dharma, at page 4, 18 and 30 of this souvenir. What Bhagwan has said about Dharma. With his grace, we are now going to get his benediction and Swami's discourse. In a few minutes, I thank our team from Radio Sai for transcribing his discourse in English, which you can read on your screens. Brothers and sisters, let's pray to Bhagwan and wait for his divine words. Jai Sai Ram.
Satyam. Pratyaksha Daivame Satyam.
Truth is divinity manifest.
Ramo Vigrahavan Dharmaha. Dharma Swarupude Daivamu.
It is said, Rama is the very embodiment of Dharma. God is righteousness embodied.
Daivamanaga Vere Ekkadunnadu Ani Vetukanakkarledu.
You need not search for God elsewhere.
Satya Dharmamulu Sarvatra Vintunnayi.
Truth and righteousness are present everywhere.
కనుకని సత్య ధర్మమును మనం అన్వేషించడానికి ప్రయత్నం చేయనక్కర్లేదు.
Therefore, we need not make an effort to search for satya and dharma.
అనేక మంది సత్య ధర్మ ప్రచారకులని తాము అనేక విధములైనటువంటి ప్రయత్నములు చేస్తున్నామని భావిస్తారు.
Many feel that they are putting in lots of effort in propagating the principles of truth and righteousness.
లేని చోటుగా ఉంటే ఆ లేని చోటు దీనిని ప్రచారం చేయవచ్చును. సర్వత్రా ఉండినటువంటి సత్య ధర్మమును ప్రచారం చేయటం ఎందుకు?
ఇఫ్ దేర్ ఇస్ అ ప్లేస్ వేర్ దే ఆర్ నాట్ ప్రెసెంట్ దెన్ దే కెన్ బి ప్రొపగేటెడ్ అండ్ స్ప్రెడ్ దేర్. వై ప్రొపగేట్ సత్య అండ్ ధర్మ దట్ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఎవ్రీవేర్?
కనుకనే దీన్ని ప్రచారం చేయనక్కర్లేదు, ఆచరణ చేయాలి.
దేర్ఫోర్ దే డోంట్ హ్యావ్ టు బి ప్రొపగేటెడ్ అండ్ ప్రీచ్డ్, దే హ్యావ్ టు బి ప్రాక్టీస్డ్.
ఇది ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చింది ఈ ధర్మము?
వేర్ ఫ్రమ్ డస్ దిస్ ధర్మ కమ్?
ధర్మం అనేటువంటిది ధృక్ అనేటువంటి ధాతువు నుంచి వచ్చినటువంటిది.
దిస్ వర్డ్ ధర్మ కమ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ద రూట్ వర్డ్ ధృత్.
ఈ ధృక్ అనేటువంటి సంస్కృత పదం నుంచి వచ్చినటువంటి ఈ ధర్మముకు దీనికి మూలాధారమైనటువంటిది ధారణి అనేటువంటి పదం.
ఫర్ దిస్ సంస్కృత్ వర్డ్ ధర్మ దట్ హాస్ కమ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద రూట్ ధృత్, ద వర్డ్ ధారణి ఇస్ ద బేసిస్.
ఈ ధారణి అనేటువంటిది సర్వమును కూడా విశ్వాన్ని కట్టివేసినటువంటిది ఈ ధారణి అనే అర్థము.
ద మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద వర్డ్ ధారణి ఈజ్ దాట్ విచ్ బైండ్స్ ది ఎంటైర్ యూనివర్స్.
ఈ ధర్మం అనేటువంటిది విశ్వాన్ని కప్పివేసినటువంటిది.
దిస్ ధర్మ ఎన్గల్ఫ్స్ ది ఎంటైర్ యూనివర్స్.
ధారయతీతి ధర్మ, ఈ యొక్క విశ్వాన్ని ధరించినటువంటిది ధర్మము.
ద యూనివర్స్ ఇస్ బట్ అ వెస్చర్ పుట్ ఆన్ బై ధర్మ.
విశ్వమునంతా కూడా ఏక కట్టుగా కట్టి పాలించినదే ధర్మము.
ధర్మ ఇస్ దాట్ విచ్ బైండ్స్ ద హోల్ యూనివర్స్ ఇన్ టు వన్.
కేవలం ఒక దేశమునకు కానీ ఒక కాలమునకు కానీ ఒక వ్యక్తులకు కానీ సంబంధించినటువంటిది కాదు.
ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ రిలేట్ టు వన్ పర్టికులర్ నేషన్ టైమ్ ఆర్ అ స్పెసిఫిక్ ఇండివిజువల్.
అన్ని దేశములకు అన్ని కాలములకు అన్ని వ్యక్తులకు కూడా సంబంధించినటువంటిదే ఈ సత్య ధర్మములు.
Truth and righteousness apply to all nations, all periods of time and all individuals.
సత్యం అనేటువంటి పునాది పైన ధర్మం అనేటువంటి భవనం నిర్మించింది.
ఆన్ ద ఫౌండేషన్ ఆఫ్ ట్రూత్ ద బిల్డింగ్ ధర్మ హాస్ బీన్ ఎస్టాబ్లిష్డ్.
ఈ ధర్మ భవనమునకు ఏ చేటు కూడాను రాదు, ఏ లోటు కూడాను లేదు.
దిస్ మ్యాన్షన్ ఆఫ్ ధర్మ విల్ నైదర్ ఫేస్ ఎనీ హార్మ్ నార్ బి టచ్డ్ బై ఎనీ ఇన్అడిక్వసీస్.
యదాయదా హి ధర్మస్య గ్లానిర్భవతి భారత అభ్యుద్ధానం అధర్మస్య తదాత్మానం సృజామహం. ధర్మము ఎప్పటికీ నశించేటువంటిది కాదు.
O Arjuna, whenever there is a decline in dharma and a predominance of adharma, at that time I manifest, said the Lord in the Gita. dharma never gets destroyed.
నిజముగా ధర్మమే నశించేటువంటిదైతే అది ధర్మమే కాదు.
Truly speaking, if dharma gets destroyed, it is not dharma at all.
ధర్మము నశించేటువంటిది కాదు.
Dharma never perishes.
అనేక మరుగుపడేటువంటిది కాదు.
It cannot be hidden either.
కొంతకాలము మానవుని యొక్క ఆచరణ సన్నగిల్లి పోవటం చేతనే అది మరుగుపడినట్టుగా కనిపిస్తుంది.
Dharma briefly appears as though it is hidden when man's practice of dharma dwindles.
సత్య ధర్మంలో రెండు కూడాను అవినాభావ సంబంధము అన్యోన్యాశ్రయము.
Truth and righteousness are interrelated and interdependent.
కనుక సత్యము ధర్మమును పోషించే నిమిత్తమై ఆచరించే నిమిత్తమై ఆనందించే నిమిత్తమై దీన్ని మనం ఆచరించాలి.
Therefore, in order to uphold, protect and derive bliss from satya and dharma, they should be practiced.
ప్రాచీన కాలము నుండి భారతీయులు తమ యొక్క ధర్మమును తమ యొక్క సత్యమును నేత్ర సమానంగా విశ్వసించి కాపాడుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
Since ancient times, the Bharatiyas have been protecting satya and dharma as their two eyes.
ధర్మం ఎటువంటిది?
What is the nature of dharma?
ధర్మం నీకంటే ముందు పుట్టినటువంటి తల్లి వంటిది.
Dharma is like your mother who was born before you.
ధర్మమును సెలెక్షన్ చేసుకునేటువంటి వారికి ఎవరికి అధికారం లేదు.
No one has the authority to select dharma.
ధర్మమును సెలెక్ట్ చేసుకునేటువంటి ఒక్క దైవమునికి మాత్రమే అధికారం.
God alone has the authority to select dharma.
కనుకనే మనకు ధర్మం ఎటువంటిది అంటే మాతృమూర్తి వంటిది ధర్మము.
So what is dharma? Dharma is like the mother.
కనుకనే మాతృపిత్ర ఆజ్ఞలను మనం శిరసావహించాలి.
So we must obey our mother and father implicitly. Consider your mother as God. Consider your father as God. So truth and righteousness are divinity manifest for us. Our elders have always advised that righteousness is of the utmost importance in each and every small act we perform.
మానవుని నడక మొదలుకొని చూపు మొదలుకొని శ్రవణం మొదలుకొని ఆటలు మొదలుకొని పాటలు మొదలుకొని అంత ధర్మసిద్ధమైన రీతిగా వస్తూ వచ్చాయి.
Be it walking, seeing, listening, playing, singing and so on, all have been subjected to and guided by righteousness.
ఇది అంతా కూడాను ధర్మ మూలం మిదం జగత్తు. జగత్తంతప్పుడు ధర్మంతో ఆధారపడినటువంటిది.
ఆల్ దిస్ సజెస్ట్ దట్ రైచియస్నెస్ ఫార్మ్స్ ద వెరీ బేసిస్ ఆఫ్ ద వరల్డ్. ది ఎంటైర్ వరల్డ్ ఇస్ ఫౌండెడ్ ఆన్ రైచియస్నెస్.
కనుక జగత్ అంటే ఏమిటి?
సో వాట్ డు వి మీన్ బై ద వరల్డ్?
జగత్తుకు ప్రత్యేకమైన ఒక స్వరూపం లేదు.
ద వరల్డ్ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ అ స్పెసిఫిక్ ఫార్మ్.
మానవుల యొక్క ఏకత్వమే జగత్తు.
ద కంగ్లామరేషన్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ కైండ్ ఇస్ ద వరల్డ్.
సమాజము అంటారు.
సమ్ సే సొసైటీ.
సమాజమునకు పేరుంది కానీ రూపం లేదు.
సొసైటీ హ్యాస్ అ నేమ్ బట్ నో ఫార్మ్.
పది మంది చేరినటువంటిది ఒక సమాజము.
వెన్ 10 పీపుల్ కమ్ టుగెదర్ ఇట్ ఇస్ అ సొసైటీ.
కనుక సమాజమునకు రూపం లేదు.
సో ద సొసైటీ హ్యాస్ నో ఫార్మ్.
కానీ సమాజమునకు గుణం ఉంటుండాలి.
బట్ ద సొసైటీ హ్యాస్ అ క్వాలిటీ ఆన్ నేచర్.
ఏమిటి ఆ గుణము?
వాట్ ఇస్ దాట్ క్వాలిటీ?
సత్య ధర్మంలే ప్రధాన గుణం సొసైటీ.
ట్రూత్ అండ్ రైచియస్నెస్ ఆర్ ద మెయిన్ క్వాలిటీస్ ఫర్ అ సొసైటీ.
ఈ సొసైటీ దీనిని అంగీకరించుకునేటువంటి ఒక పనులు ఏమైనా చేసినప్పుడు ఈ జగత్తు వాటిని ఖండిస్తుంది.
వెన్ ద సొసైటీ ఇండల్జెస్ ఇన్ యాక్షన్స్ దట్ ఆర్ నాట్ అప్రూవ్డ్ ఆఫ్ బై దీస్ క్వాలిటీస్ ద వరల్డ్ కండెమ్స్ ఇట్.
ఏదైనా మనం ఫలం భుజించే సమయంలో రుచికరం కానటువంటి ప్రజలను కింద పారవేస్తాం మనం.
యాజ్ యూ ఈట్ అ ఫ్రూట్ ఇఫ్ ఇట్స్ నాట్ డెలిషియస్ వి త్రో ఇట్ అవే.
అదే రీతిగానే సమాజమునకు సంతోష పెట్టనటువంటి ఒక పనులు సమాజం కూడా మనం వెనక్కి నెట్టుతుంది.
సిమిలర్లీ ఇఫ్ వీ డోంట్ డూ సర్టన్ యాక్ట్స్ విచ్ మేక్స్ సొసైటీ హ్యాపీ, వీ టూ విల్ బి రిజెక్టెడ్ బై ద సొసైటీ.
ఒక విత్తనం ఉంటుండాలి.
హియర్ ఇస్ అ సీడ్.
ఈ విత్తనం ఒక టిన్నులో పెట్టి నీరు పోస్తే మొక్క వస్తుందా?
ఇఫ్ యూ కీప్ ద సీడ్ ఇన్ అ టిన్ అండ్ వాటర్ ఇట్, వుడ్ ఇట్ జర్మినేట్?
కాదు, విత్తనం కూడా కుళ్లిపోతుంది.
ద సీడ్ ఆల్సో డీకేస్.
ఆ సీడ్ ని మనము మట్టిలో పెట్టినప్పుడే మొక్క వస్తుంది.
ఆన్ ది అదర్ హ్యాండ్ ఇఫ్ యూ సో ద సీడ్ ఇన్ ద సాయిల్ ఇట్ వుడ్ జర్మినేట్.
ధర్మం అనేటువంటిది ప్రచారం చేత కూడా కానీ లేక ప్రబోధన చేత కానీ అభివృద్ధి కాదు.
Righteousness too will not grow by preaching or by giving sermons. In the field of our hearts, if the seed of dharma is sown, it grows into a tree of peace and security. Therefore, righteousness is highly valuable. How will you ascertain this? In this world, you find many people propagating many types of dharma. But if you seek self-satisfaction, then you must satisfy your conscience. But in order to escape, you speak many things and claim that it is the truth.
Kadu, kadu.
No, no. The word spoken in accordance to your conscience would be called satyam or truth. It is called master.
Follow the master. Who is your master? Your conscience is your master.
Your teacher, guru or some other swami are not your masters.
Your conscience is your guru. Follow the master.
That is why it is said, follow the master. Who is this master? You think it is your teacher? No.
You think
it is Guru who gives you some mantra? No. Your heart is the one which gives you the mantra.
Kanuka Patti Vokati Kudanu Patti Satyam Kudanu Atin Chai Anduvalni Vedamlo Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara.
That is why everyone must live by truth. Therefore the Vedas say, speak truth, practice dharma. It is said to practice dharma and not to speak about it. It instructs to speak truth and not practice truth. It is the tongue that speaks and the hand that performs action. While doing both of these, mind must be unified. This is true dharma. There should be perfect combination between the two.
Unity.
There should be unity. When there is unity, there will be purity. When purity develops, we will attain divinity.
Govinda Krishna Jai, Gopala Krishna Jai, Gopala Bala Bala Rama Krishna Jai. Krishna Jai. Krishna Jai.
Jai, Krishna Jai, Krishna Jai, Krishna 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 Jai. Krishna Jai, Rama Krishna Jai, Radha Krishna Jai, Bala Krishna 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 Jai.
कृष्ण हरे सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे कृष्ण हरे सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे राम हरे साई कृष्ण हरे सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
राम हरे साई कृष्ण हरे सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
अल्ला ईश्वर साई हरे
ईश्वर साई हरे
नानक यीशु बुद्ध हरे
राष्ट्र महावीर साई हरे
बाबा सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
बाबा सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
राम हरे साई कृष्ण हरे सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
राम हरे साई कृष्ण हरे सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
अल्ला ईश्वर साई हरे यीशु बुद्ध हरे
बुद्ध हरे
राष्ट्र महावीर साई हरे
राष्ट्र महावीर साई हरे
सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई
बाबा सर्वधर्म प्रिय साई हरे
बाबा सर्वधर्म प्रिय
राम हरे साई कृष्ण हरे
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 सर्वधर्म स्वरूपा साई
सर्वधर्म स्वरूपा साई
सर्वधर्म स्वरूपा साई
सर्वधर्म स्वरूप
avatara. Parati ke avatara.
Parati ke avatara.
Mere baba, mere sai.
Mere baba, mere sai.
Mere baba, mere sai.
Mere baba, mere sai.
Sai ra.
Jagannatha, Nada Brahma Jagannatha. साई बाबा जी की जय।